Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
It's a really bizarre kind of line, I think, for Latino artists to navigate, where you're like, we want to be part of a global discussion, but if I make this too Latino, then it's going to be identity art, you know?
Welcome to Radio Ambulante Unscripted, a new way to listen to Latin America, part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm Daniel Alarcón. So let's say you're not an art critic. Let's say that contemporary Latin American art is just not your thing. When was the last time you visited an art exhibit by a Latino or Latin American artist? Could you name at least three Latin American artists without naming Frida Kahlo? Don't feel bad if you're having a hard time with these questions, because really, it's not completely your fault. The fact is that museums in the U.S. don't put on too many exhibits by Latino or Latin American artists. They just don't. I sat down with Carolina Miranda, art critic and journalist, to ask her why. She recently returned to her hometown, Los Angeles, to write a blog for the LA Times called Culture High and Low. I wanted to talk with Carolina about the Latino and Latin American art scene in the U.S. and about her experience covering art and culture. First, I wanted to know more about the start of her career. Did she always know that the life of a journalist was going to be the path for her?
I did not know right away that the life of the journalist was a life for me. I had actually gone to college with every intention of becoming a professor in Latin American history and, you know, writing PhDs on obscure topics. So this was definitely a kind of a crazy left turn that I made in terms of what I wanted to do. And part of it was that job at the LA Times. I got a summer job as a research assistant for a reporter and columnist by the name of Robert Scheer. And it was he who really, it was he and my experience as a desk assistant at the LA Times back in 1990 that kind of planted the bug of journalism in me. It was sort of like a crazy coincidence of events to me getting those jobs that was kind of accidental and fortuitous. And it was really that that led me to discover that this was something that I wanted to do. So it's been kind of a crooked path to get to journalism, and it's been a crooked path since. I started off, one of my first jobs in journalism was at the LA Times as a desk assistant, where I was a bit of a paper pusher. You know, I scanned photos and did expense accounts and routed calls to the reporters, you know, back in the day before everybody had cell phones. And we would print out layouts every day, and they would be shot around the building in pneumatic tubes. You know, you could still feel when they printed the paper, some of the printing presses were still in the building in those days. And, you know, you'd get that rumble when the printing presses started up. And so so there was something really romantic, I think, about it to me. And what really appealed to me was this idea that you could kind of be involved in writing the first draft of history. That if I had been interested in teaching Latin American history, like, wow, how much cooler would it be to have a role in writing some of the documents that people look at when they're researching it? So that's really what got me. And it's been ever since then. I've had a sequence of media jobs, mainly in New York, but now back in Los Angeles, that have brought me full circle right back to the Los Angeles Times.
Tell me a little bit about, now that you've come back, about your mandate for this blog at the LA Times, High Low.
Well, the blog is a pretty open platform, and I think I'm pretty lucky to have it. They approached me about doing something online, and I was interested in doing something that wouldn't limit me to covering contemporary art, because I do cover a lot of contemporary art, but I cover other subjects as well. I've written about travel. I've written about Peruvian food. I've written about skate park design. I have done stories about Supreme Court nominations, you know, for Time magazine. So the breadth of topics that interest me is pretty broad, and they tend to have a cultural bent, you know, sort of how does a particular issue reflect what our culture is or who we are. You know, I'm not breaking news, but I am looking at a wide gamut of topics. And so I've covered video games. I've covered architecture. I wrote a story about the 9/11 memorial. I've done stories about contemporary art controversies at the Whitney Museum. I mean, it's really spanned the gamut of what cultural production is about. And, you know, that's really exciting to me. And as part of that, it means that I can cover the topics I love within that, which is, you know, occasionally running into some amazing Latino or Latin American photographer and really being able to sort of give them a platform to showcase their work. I mean, I think a great example of that is recently I wrote a story about this photographer named Ricardo Valverde, who was this guy who'd shot a lot in LA in like the 70s and early 80s, lived in East LA in Highland Park, and did really imaginative things with his photographs. Like, he didn't take pictures, he didn't just document, he would also alter the pictures and color them and scrape them and scratch them to produce these really beguiling works of art. And, you know, he was someone that had died at a young age, so had never really received his due. And, you know, I was able to write a story about it. There was a small show of his work at the Vincent Price Art Museum here in East LA, and I was able to write a story about it and sort of bring him more attention. So to be able to do those kinds of stories too is really important to me. You know, he is part of what art in LA is about.
Yeah, I saw those images via the blog, and it seems like so much of like Latino art sometimes, or especially photography, I guess, gets put in the category of almost being anthropological,
yes.
You know, reportage.
Yes.
And what I liked most about those images, and I would, we'll put a link to it up on the page, is how they weren't that at all. They were, you know, like you said, completely, you know, intervenidos, you know, they'd been dealt with, you know, the images.
Exactly. There was something a little surreal. I mean, when I went to see the show for the first time, I really didn't know what to expect of his work. And the museum's really close to my house, so I always go to all their stuff. And I go there and I was like, oh my God, why have I never heard of this guy? Like, these are these kind of sensuous, hyperreal images that, like, you know, they don't just chronicle life. Like, they take it and they give it a twist, which is what the best art does, you know? And so I was really compelled to do something. And, you know, as a result, later the paper ended up reviewing the show. I mean, I don't know if that had anything to do with me or not. But, you know, I'd like to think that in my position, I can sort of point at things that I think should be part of the canon, but aren't necessarily because of who happened to produce them.
Totally. You know, I was looking at your old blog, Sea Monster, and it had this line that I really liked, describing sort of what the blog is about, which was saying artists, ideas, oddities, and stuff that makes me outraged and thrilled. So I was wondering if you could expand on that. So it's like, sort of like what thrills you as a critic and sort of what pisses you off too.
Yeah. I mean, I think what thrills me is ideas. It's art about ideas. I mean, I think the area that I focus on in coverage is art and artists. And, you know, I don't cover the market. I don't really care how much paintings cost. I don't know, you know, I don't know that I'll ever care who the highest, you know, artist at auction is. For me, it really gets down to the ideas. And how can an artist take something in the cultural ether and make something out of it that really makes us reflect on who we are. You know, I recall visiting this exhibition by Natalie Bookchin. She's an LA-based artist, and she did this installation at LA Contemporary Exhibits a couple of years back, where she essentially had taken like all of these pieces of video blogs off of YouTube and created this absolutely surreal installation that examined questions of race and African American men and sort of what society expects of them and where we want to keep them and so on and so forth. And it was this incredible example of somebody who had taken something that is in the culture and just made us see it completely anew. And so I think as a writer, as a critic, that's what gets me excited. When I see somebody, you know, taking what's around us and just transforming it and making us opening our eyes to it, really. Now, in terms of the outrage part, I think it's, you know, the money drives me a little bananas. You know, it's like the fact that so much discussion about art is about money. You know, that when we talk about, for example, you know, there's this move to in Detroit to potentially sell the collection of the Detroit Institute of Art to pay for some pension obligations. And the entire discussion revolving that collection of art has to do with how much it's worth. How much are the paintings worth collectively? How much could they pay for? You know, how could they get the city out of debt? And at no point do I really see stories that say, hey, what are these pieces worth together culturally? What does it mean to keep them all in this museum? What does it say about us? What does it say about this city? You know, that the cultural value of objects, especially in U.S. culture, is often reduced to money. And so that gets me worked up, you know. And then there's always pretension. Pretension is always good to make me crazy. Yeah.
Well, you know, about the money, though, I mean, I agree with you. I sort of intuitively feel like your diagnosis is correct. On the other hand, because so much Latino art is ignored, it never gets the chance to make a splash in that way, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm wondering is, does that give Latino artists a certain amount of freedom because they're sort of ignored by the marketplace anyway, and so that they can do their own thing as it is, or am I idealizing this neglect because I'm just ignorant?
I mean, yes and no. You know, it's a complicated question to answer because on the one hand, not garnering the attention of the market, yes, it does give you freedom. If you're not, but I think partially that freedom comes from an artist who takes that freedom, not necessarily by an artist who's forced to abide by it. You know what I mean? Then it's not so much freedom as it is a trap. Like other artists make money from their work, but Latino artists don't. So, you know, how is that freedom? I mean, I always think that the most free artists are the ones who don't pay as much attention to the market, the ones who make work because they have to make work, not because they want to sell objects, the ones who don't compromise on their work. I mean, I think those are always the freest artists. I think the problem for Latino artists is that by frequently not being part of the market, it means they don't get talked about. And then because they don't get talked about, they also are seen as not having value, as what they're saying is not important enough to be worth money. Therefore, it can't be worth ideas either. And so it's a tricky divide. It's a tricky line to navigate, I think, for artists. And I think for Latino artists, because I feel like we are a very invisible part of the culture. So, you know, how do you wrestle with that? I mean, actually, what's kind of interesting is that right now, one of these sort of hot young artists at auction is a Colombian guy by the name of Oscar Murillo, who's pretty young and controversially, you know, not that great of an artist. But because a bunch of collectors have thrown their weight behind him, his work is all of a sudden auctioning for like millions of dollars. So it's not as if Latinos aren't totally present, but I think we're definitely way underrepresented right in that debate.
Well, so actually that's one of the reasons that I wanted to set up this conversation is because you wrote something in Art News a few months ago about sort of a shift in the way or a potential shift in the way that galleries and museums were starting to look at Latino art and a bunch of new exhibits mm-hmm. and shows lined up for the next year to 18 months that seemed like to signal something.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting time right now. And I'm hoping that it's a tipping point, that it's not that, you know, it's like, oh, Latinos are hot. And then in 2 years, everyone's forgotten about us again. You know, it happens every few years, you know, like Ricky Martin plays on the Grammys, all of a sudden Latinos are hot. And then 2 years later, like we don't exist. So I'm hoping it's a tipping point. And what we have is in New York right now, there is a series of exhibitions devoted to Latino and Latin American art and photography, and in the coming years, there's a series of other exhibits coming down the line as well. Like MoMA has an exhibit on Latin American architecture that's in the works. That's going to be pretty huge. It's going to be a massive survey of Latin American art. Of Latin American architecture in the 20th century, and basically how Latin American architecture was influential in ways that we don't even know about. You know, that our default on all of this is Europe. Europe is the center of influence, so the United States is the center of influence. And what this show is going to argue is that actually Latin America was a center of influence too. So there's that, and then there's the whole series of Pacific Standard Time exhibitions that are coming to Southern California in 2017, which I think it's almost four dozen exhibits around Southern California exploring issues of art and culture among U.S. Latinos and Latin American artists. So The Hammer is going to have a show on radical women artists of Latin America. UC Riverside is going to have a show about, you know, Latinos and sci-fi. There's going to be exhibits about geometric abstractionism. So 2017 is definitely this year where we're going to be talking about Latin American art. And I think you know, I think this is a really important moment because, you know, every year, every couple of years, we get those census reports showing that there's more and more Latinos in the United States, but our cultural institutions don't necessarily reflect that change, that actually prior to this year, it's sometimes pretty hard to find an exhibit related to Latin American or Latino art in major U.S. institutions, especially in New York, which is the center of the art world. You know, like you have institutions like the Whitney, which have pretty much, you know, ignored the topic over the last 8 years. And so I'm hoping that this is something that, you know, wakes up a lot of curators and wakes up a lot of institutions to the fact that, you know, this is a part of our culture. This is a part of our dialogue, that what Latinos have to say and what they produce is just as significant as what might be coming out of Berlin. And perhaps given, you know, our geography, might be even more significant, you know, like we are a part of the Americas, you know, for better or worse. So I'm hoping that this will place us in a position where we're more than just the occasional sure. exotic show.
You know, one of the things you said there, I guess, gets at something that's been a question on my mind for a long time, and particularly relevant to us here at Radio Ambulante, because, you know, we consider ourselves Latino and Latin American, even though that they are not the same thing. You know what I mean? I mean, I consider myself, yes. you know, a U.S. Latino and a Latin American, a Peruano. But those are mm-hmm. not identities that necessarily go together. And it does seem that in the art world, there's a conflation sometimes of these two strands.
Exactly.
And something that I know I'm guilty of, you know, I do it almost as a cultural shorthand sometimes. But it's not the same. It's exactly. not the same.
It is not the same. Because, I mean, I think what you get sometimes is, you know, I've had museums tell me, they're like, oh, but we have had Latino artists. You know, we had XY Brazilian artists show at our museum 2 years ago. And for me, you know, that's problematic, because what often artists who emerge out of Latin America come out of, you know, the upper social classes, you know, the poor in Peru aren't going to art school. I mean, let's be real. Like, you know, the working class in Peru is not going to art school. And if they are,
but that doesn't mean they're not making art. You know?
Yeah, or it doesn't mean they're not making art, but they're not necessarily part of the structures of power that's going to get them a show at the MoMA.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, so when somebody says, oh, so-and-so Brazilian artist is showing at our museum, you know, chances are that artist emerged out of a class context that allowed them to do that, that you're looking at somebody from the upper classes in Latin America who is showing here. Whereas a lot of U.S. Latinos, you know, also face, you know, are a social and often an economic underclass. And so, and we hold a very different position. You know, a Latino in the United States who has sort of grown up here working class faces a very different reality here than the well-to-do artist who comes in from abroad. And so I think it can be very problematic to conflate those two because of what the U.S. Latino experience represents for a lot of Latinos. I mean, this is not to say that all Latinos are working class. You know, there's plenty of middle class Latinos as well. But, you know, as a society, you know, we still remain politically and economically and culturally underrepresented. And so I think museums need to be conscientious of that. I think, you know, I don't know what the statistic is, that if the U.S. were a Latin American country, we'd be like the fourth or fifth largest country in mm-hmm. in the world.
Just in terms of Spanish speakers, certainly.
And it just... Yeah, in terms of in exactly. And so it's the sort of thing where I see that, and I see museums not doing shows that in any way touch on the U.S. Latino experience. And I just see that as a tremendous oversight, and one that is, you know, overlooking what, you know, in some ways is still a social underclass, you know, underrepresented in so many guises.
We're talking earlier about the box that sometimes Latino artists can be put in, which is the anthropological box. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned the Valverde, the photographer, and there are others, you know, obviously. But I wanted to know, you know, in your conversations with Latino artists, you know, how difficult is it for artists to fight against this sort of, like, this can be a weight, you know, like, here you are, you have to represent your entire community with your, you know, denunciation art, you know.
Exactly.
That's a lot of weight to put on an artist, and it's not something that white artists get.
No, no. I mean, the default in the mainstream is the sort of white artist experience. I mean, there's two things going on here in terms of art. I think one is that the artists who do make it, U.S. Latino and Latin American, are the ones who tend to speak what I call the international language of art. You know, they're doing very heavily conceptual, abstract work that can be at home. It's kind of this globalized art that could be at home in New York, Berlin, or London, or you know, or some LA museum. And so as a result, you know, they almost, they sometimes have to give up their Latin Americanness in order to sort of be included in this universe. At the same time, I think the you know, our institutions of culture, you know, sometimes they do want to do that Latino show, and they do want artists to, quote, you know, to represent their culture, to make a statement about who they are. And for artists, it's so tricky, because if your art gets pegged as that's all you do, then your opportunities to exhibit and your opportunities in the market are going to be very limited, because people will look upon it as identity art, you know, like, oh, it's identity art. That's very 80s. You know, we're past the identity thing. We're post-racial. So it's like the art world wants it, but they don't want it. You know what I mean? It's like it's a really bizarre kind of line, I think, for Latino artists to navigate, where you're like, we want to be part of a global discussion, but if I make this too Latino, then it's going to be identity art. You know, you don't really get shown because you're Chicano, but then if you go into a Chicano art show, then you're pegged as Chicano, and nobody wants to show you in any other guys either. So it's this really tricky thing for Latino artists to navigate. And, you know, I even feel it. I feel it as a writer. I don't know if you feel it in your novels, but it's like, I mean, in every place that I've worked, I've always been really careful of, you know, I'm not here to just cover Latino. I'm here to comment on the wide gamut of culture. I don't just do the Latino stories, nor do I want to. Like, you know, if I want to write a story about the Whitney, I want to write a story about the Whitney. And just because we're Latino doesn't kind of limit us to that universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, I totally feel that, and I feel like it's a very delicate dance sometimes. I mean, I feel it in that I sometimes feel like personally I'm asked to comment and to speak on behalf of Peru or something that, you know, couldn't be more ridiculous. Or speak on behalf of U.S. Latinos, and again, the you know, how could that be? You know, how could anyone think that I could be a spokesman for anything? You know. And it's a tension, and I feel like if you let it, it can interfere with the artistic process, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I've been very clear in every job that I've had that it's like, you know, I'm not here to just do that. I have I think any other thinker, I like to think that I can cover myriad topics, and that, you know, it's that I'm not going to be limited to this silo.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about LA. I guess it's such a special region. It's such a special culture down there. And I wanted to ask you sort of what you missed while you were gone. And you can say burritos, by the way.
Well, of course I miss the burritos. I've always missed the burritos. I think I was always on a quest the entire time I was in New York to get a decent burrito. I think part of what I missed was really the city's inherent Latin Americanness. I am half Peruvian. I have spent a lot of time in Lima. I think LA and Lima bear some striking, you know, resemblances to each other. These sort of sprawling desert coastal cities where life is lived behind walls, and, you know, you only learn about the cool things by being with someone else and being taken into these spaces that take you behind those walls. I think the architecture is certainly reflects that, all of the Spanish Revival and Spanish Mediterranean architecture, the food, even the words we have for things, you know, that people here, you know, they don't talk about necessarily the embankment, you know, of the LA River. They'll talk about the arroyos. You know, we live in a city called Los Angeles. Like, you know, the Spanish language is like a daily part of existence here. And I feel like that was an aspect that I really missed in New York. Like, New York is a Dutch Anglo city, and it very much feels it. And you very much feel that tradition of the Northeast, of sort of, you know, the weight of American history and the Pilgrims and the Mayflower and all that stuff sort of weighing down on you. Whereas LA is just something else. It's a little newer. It's a little more Latin American. You know, this is a city that has had a Latino mayor. So I do think that Latinos are embedded in the power structures across the board in ways that they just simply aren't in New York because of New York's roots. And so, for example, like up until recently, the head of the cultural affairs office was a Latina. You have major institutions like MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, has Alma Ruiz on staff, who is a Latina curator. And she doesn't just curate quote unquote Latino shows at the museum. She does the broad spectrum of contemporary art, but you can bet that as part of what she does, you know, Latin American ideas are incorporated into the program. At LACMA, you have figures like Rita Gonzalez, who curated that amazing Phantom Sighting show about Chicano art.
Which was a great show.
And, you know, she, which was, I mean, absolutely, I tell everyone, it's like, buy that catalog, because it is a truly fantastic repository of, you know, how Chicano art evolved in the wake of the 70s. You know, you have Rita Gonzalez, like she is speaking at an institutional level, and she's not just doing shows on Latino art, she's doing shows on everything. And so that's so important. And then, you know, you have museums like the Museum of Contemporary Art in San Diego, which is a smaller institution, but which has really engaged the border as a topic and works with a lot of Tijuana artists and Mexicali artists and other artists from Mexico. And, you know, I think certainly our proximity to the border affects how we view Latinos and Latin American art. Like, you can't ignore it here. That border's right there. You know, like, you can see it from California. Like, you can see Mexico from California. To borrow a Sarah Palinism. You can't see Russia, but you can see Mexico. So I think that the institutions here, you know, and then you have at the Orange County Museum of Art, you have the California Pacific Triennial, which looks at art that comes from the United States, Latin America, and the Pacific Rim. I mean, they're doing the kinds of shows there that just aren't getting done in New York simply because of the geography, because New York has historically a tighter connection to Europe than California does. So I think our position as a major city, combined with all of the institutions that are here, combined with our proximity to the border, just make this a really important place for Latin Americans in art. That border's right there, and, you know, we are a majority-minority state, and you can ignore it, or you can finally pull it together and acknowledge it and study it and embrace it. Like, it is this is the culture of California.
Carolina Miranda is a writer and journalist. She's covered art, architecture, and travel for a variety of media outlets, including Time, Art News, Lonely Planet, and Fast Company. Now she has her own blog at the LA Times called Culture High and Low. You can find a link to that and to the articles we mentioned in this interview on our website, soundworks.org. While you're there, you can listen to other podcasts like One with Farai, Sideshow, and The World in Words. This interview was produced by Silvia Viñas with engineering help from Claire Mullen. Special thanks to Lori Ignacio and production intern Diana Buendia. The Radio Ambulante team includes Martina Castro, Camila Segura, Luis Treyes, and David Pastor. Carolina Guerrero is our executive director. Radio Ambulante Unscripted is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Radio Ambulante tells the stories of Latin America. To hear more, visit our website, radioambulante.org. There you'll find links to our stories in Spanish and more content in English too. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.